time to talk to Stephen Mayne. Lovely to see you, Stephen. Are you better? We missed you.
I am 100% now, unlike the stock market, which is
very
sick. Very
unwell.
Yes, very unwell.
Look, it's not a pretty picture, and I'm always, it's an interesting, you can't hide from the facts, but the reality is that there is no confidence to be gained from anywhere, it seems, at the moment.
Well,
unless you're in oil.
Yeah, that's right, unless you're Saudi Arabia. I haven't seen sort of this sort of run of doom and gloom. I mean, just if you look at what happened today, we had Australia's sort of biggest general property company, GPT, which yesterday put out a shock 27% profit warning, and their shares fell another 23 cents to $1.87 today, which is like a 15-year low. And this is a company which owns $14 billion worth of property. It owns, you know, Melbourne Central, 530 Collins Street, where the stock exchange used to be. Vast empire of shopping centres. It owns the Ayers Rock Resort, a whole bunch of those islands, Dunk Island, El Questro Resorts. You know, this is the doyen of property trusts, the very first property trust from 1971, and it's in crisis. And its shares are down 24% in 2 days to a 15-year low. It's had a massive $170 million cut in its profit forecast, and it's got $4.5 billion of debt, which is viewed by many as too much, and its board and its management have just lost all credibility, and everyone in the market's just saying, if this can happen to GPT, which is far more credible than the Centros of the world, then
What's lurking in other businesses that we haven't yet seen flow through?
That's right. So even today, Asciano, which owns Pacific National, our biggest rail company, and it owns the Patrick Stevedoring business, which is part of the duopoly on the wharves in the stevedoring space, its shares fell 20% today, down to a record low of $2.72.
I had a discussion today around if you took out all the resource stocks on the market, what shape would our markets be in?
Well,
not good.
I haven't crunched the numbers, but I dare say it would be maybe not quite back to the March 2003 low of 2,700, but it would certainly would be well below 4,000. So you're right, the BHP and Rio and all those big resource
stocks.
And
when last were we at those sort of numbers?
Oh, well, the low March, just when the Iraq war started, I think it was March 2003. So it went from a run from 2,700 to the peak on November 1 of 6,873. So it was the most incredible run that we've seen. I mean, it almost tripled, which we haven't seen
before. So is this the adjustment we needed to have, or is there something a lot murkier?
Well, I guess we've fallen 27% from in the All Ords from 6,873 to today's close of 5,022. And I think a lot of people agree it ran too far, that there was a credit boom and easy money, everyone could borrow, and all these companies were borrowing to do payouts, and we had private equity and Qantas being taken over, and it just got crazy, housing bubbles and resource bubbles and China and all this sort of stuff. But I think the severity of the credit crunch is what has surprised a lot of people, and just the fact that Australian companies are so indebted and Australian households are so indebted. So we really are getting whacked in many respects harder than other countries. Like the US banking system's in crisis, whereas our banks are strong, and our banks are one of the few strong things out there. But if you look at the companies that have been hit, I mean, our second biggest hotel empire collapsed, which was owned by MFS. Our second biggest shopping centre empire collapsed, which was Centro. Babcock and Brown Power, which is our second biggest power station owner, they're in sort of debt crisis. Transurban, our biggest toll road company, their shares plunged almost 20% in one day. Macquarie Airport's the biggest airport company. They've also got, you know, too much debt in their various assets, and they've plunged, and they're now trading around $2 when they claim they're worth $5. So the market is not discriminating in just punishing. You know, there's a new dirty word out there. It begins with D, and it's called debt. And
debt.
If you've got it or you say it, then you just get clobbered indiscriminately.
The US economy is the one where it seems to me a lot of this is stemming from, and the pain there just continues. I mean, we've seen General Motors today saying potentially they're going to have to shut down more plants. A lot of discussion around whether there are businesses there that are technically bankrupt. And if there were any other sort of businesses, you would stop trading.
Well, particularly the two big car companies, Ford and General Motors, all their worker liabilities and health fund liabilities. You know, the fact that General Motors is now worth $5 billion, which is, you know, less than Mattel, which makes the toy cars. You know, people are sort of saying this is a joke. But I guess the bottom line here is that America's been living high on the hog, like Australia, and at a government level and at a consumer level have been borrowing too much. And a couple of million Americans borrowed money they shouldn't have borrowed to buy houses. And it's crashed, and now all those nations and consumers and companies which have got too much debt, and America and Australia are very similar in those respects, with the big difference being the strength of our banking system versus the absolute calamity in their banking system. But all those with debt and big current account deficits are being hit, and so, we're being clobbered, they're being clobbered.
And would we be in a lot worse condition if we did not have the resources boom that we are having and the development going on in China and India?
Well, I think it is the saving grace. I mean, iron ore and coal export income next year is going to rise by $40 billion. It's quite interesting. A lot of the other base metals like nickel and lead and zinc, they've all been sold off quite heavily, and people have felt there's been a bubble in those. But it's the ones with the long-term contracts, and coal and iron ore are our two biggest export markets, and they are the two that are absolutely rocketing ahead. But ironically, a lot of the benefit doesn't flow to Australia from that because, more than 80% of our resource projects are foreign-owned. So few people realise that the likes of Marubeni and Mitsubishi and these sort of big Japanese trading houses actually own well over $10 billion worth of Australian coal and iron ore assets. And so when we talk about our current account deficit being $70 billion, a lot of that is the super profits flowing offshore to the likes of Xstrata, which has got $50 billion worth of mining assets, and Anglo American, the big South African mining company, which got about $20 billion worth of mining assets. So apart from BHP and Rio, we don't actually have that much Australian-owned, Australian-listed resource stocks. And those that we do have are booming, and the government's booming because they clip the ticket for 30%, whether it's foreign-owned or Australian-owned. It's a bit of a shame, I reckon, that so much of the, 80% of the big resource players are foreign-owned these days.
Oh, well, you're making me feel really great. Dennis, is there anything that you've got to brighten my day?
Me? I have an extra $21 a week.
Thanks.
I mean, that's got to make you feel pretty good.
Because at the ABC, we are on the minimum.
20 a week.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a big decision.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess what, it's, Stephen, it's about 4%, is it? 3 or
4%? Yeah, 4%.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seemed to be about right. Extraordinary story from the courts. Jodie Harris, the notorious con woman, brought to book and pleads guilty to 96 offences.
And 15 personalities. Well, I won't say personalities, well, but different guises.
Yeah, but some few intriguing stories emerged about how she would borrow your identity. And sort of one woman fell over in the city and Jodie Harris appeared and was all of a sudden a doctor, only too anxious to relieve her of her aches and pains and driver's licence and credit card details and all the rest. So, yeah, she's more front than mines by the sound of it. But, she's already been sentenced in New South Wales. She's now about to be sentenced here. She'll be back in court in November for a pre-sentence hearing. But the Catch Me If You Can thief has been caught.
And she's not hiding from the various guises. She's sort of facing
She pleaded guilty today. Mm. So I think, the writing must have been on the wall. Yeah, some great pictures from the cold snap today. I mean, no doubt you've been. Mm. I heard you saying you've got your overcoat out of.
No, I haven't had it out for years. It's shocking.
So people out sort of playing snowball fights and so on just outside of Dalesford today and tobogganing downhill. So great fun there. And we need the rain, don't we?
And it was a good dose of rain overnight. It was really good. Yeah. And apparently falling in really good parts of the state in terms of, our crops and things being planted.
Excellent. Meanwhile, in Japan, the GH not really doing anything about agreeing on climate change. They're all at six and sevens, making nice noises, but not really committing themselves to anything. And another perennial story, Tassie reckons it's going to be in the AFL come hell or high water, Bev.
Well, I can't say who I was having lunch with today, but I can tell you I don't think so.
No?
Mm.
Well, they reckon they're going to sidestep Andrew Demetrio and go straight to the commissioners.
So they should too.
Bring them round.
It's ridiculous that Tasmania produces so many great footballers and don't have a team.
They have a team. It's called the Hawthorn.
Well, get them over there. Ship them down there.
No, don't you start,
I'm not,
mate.
I'm not. You know what Hawthorn's president reckons?
Well,
he reckons our club ought to go up to the Gold Coast.
Well, we don't listen to him. But he got a very good deal from the Tasmanian Premier, a monstrous deal. And effectively, that is the team that plays in Tasmania.
No, I'm with Stephen. I reckon Tassie ought to have their own side.
Oh, look, I think everyone should have their own side, but I don't think it's going to happen. Not in this current, let's just say this current group, I don't think will be successful. But good luck.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Is there any light at the end of the tunnel to all this doom and gloom, or is it just going to go on and on and on? What's your crystal ball saying?
Oh, well, look, you know, actually, there was some funny good news today, Ian. One stock that went up 3% was Transurban. Oh. Because, would you believe it, they released their traffic figures and their revenue over the June quarter on the CityLink project rose by 10%.
Goodness gracious.
So apparently they've slugged the cabbies with a special taxi toll, which has given them a bumper revenue boost, which has sent the stock up 3%. So if you're driving through the tunnel now and you're a cabbie and you're getting slugged, you know why. And well, it's hardly good news, Ian, but it was the one stock that went up today.
I better go up and earn a living.
Thanks, Hendo. Yeah, no minimum wage for you unless you do. 7 p.m. Ian Henderson will be back. 11 minutes to 6, it is On the Drive Home this Tuesday afternoon. Stephen Mayne, my guest, talking business, talking finance, with a lot of doom and gloom in the markets again. Stephen, an SMS, can you explain why a strong economy is good until inflation goes up, when suddenly a slow economy is good?
Well, you don't want inflation because it eats away at the value of everyone's assets and wages and is just a killer. So you want an economy that grows but doesn't overheat and cause a big wages breakout and prices breakouts and these sort of things. So that's why you like to aim for the solid 3 to 4% growth over and above inflation. And then when you get things like crazy stock markets and housing bubbles and these things, which is what we had last year when I think really things did overheat, full employment, having to massively increase skilled migration, I think it's fair to say that our economy did overheat, massive backlog of infrastructure. Suddenly state governments across the country are borrowing tens of billions of dollars to cope with all the infrastructure strains. I think we had arguably too much growth, struggled to cope with the whole resources boom and the consumer boom and the plasma import boom. But now I think the argument is that we're going into a fairly precipitous slump, because if you look at those business confidence figures that came out from National Australia Bank today, they're saying it was the very unexpected and significant drop-off in confidence in June, and it's the worst it's been since September 11. Plus, a job ad figures down by 20% since December, and
which is a very sharp contrast. It seems as if somewhere along the line we didn't get the planning right.
Well, I think that's right. I think that what's happened is that we've had substantial increases in interest rates by our central bank, and then we've had the global credit crunch hitting us offshore, and a lot of people were spending up big because the stock market was going up and because their super was going up and their house was going up. So you all felt comfortable to whack a bit more on the credit card. Suddenly household debt hit $1 trillion. Super funds are looking at 12% negative for the year. Stock market's off 27% from the peak. Interest
and
rates have gone up.
The dodgy housing loans fall over.
That's right. And then when you hear, you know, Professor Garnaut saying the sky's going to fall in, and there's doom and gloom talk everywhere. Oil's gone to 145, and there's a real sense of pessimism out there. I mean, Ian's question before, you know, give us some good
news. Give us some good news.
That's just reflected. Just chatting in cafes, you just hear it, that people have suddenly just hit the wall in terms of the economy. And I personally think that we probably need an interest rate cut pretty rapidly, because I think that we're coming to a screeching halt in terms of economic performance at the moment.
Now let's talk Wayne Swan in China, and a lot of debate around just what Australia's attitude is towards investment from China.
Well, it's just the one saving grace on the stock market at the moment, is that there's just been this unprecedented deluge of Chinese government investments in our resource projects. And Wayne Swan gave a big speech on Friday, where it was a funny situation, because he sort of briefed journalists that he was getting tough on China and not letting the Chinese come in and buy up everything holus bolus. But then in terms of what he actually said to the audience, it was things like, I've approved a Chinese investment every 9 days since I've become the treasurer. And whilst Chinese applications were running at $10 billion a year in 2005-06 and 2006-07, I've had $30 billion of applications just in my first 8 months as treasurer. So it's just been an absolute deluge.
And also balancing this juggling act of wanting to be friends with China. You know, we saw Kevin Rudd making sure that was one of his first overseas stops. They understand the importance of China, but it is saying, well, we still have to keep control of some of our assets.
Well, that's right, and he keeps saying it's a Australia's approach to foreign investment is a non-discriminatory approach, which it is and always has been. But at the end of the day, the elephant in the room that Wayne Swan doesn't really address when he speaks publicly about this is that China is a communist totalitarian state that doesn't believe in free press, it supports Robert Mugabe, it does things in Darfur that people don't like, and do you really want an undemocratic government... which could at some point get into a dispute with the US and Taiwan and all these sorts of things, actually coming in and now being the biggest shareholder in Rio Tinto and now controlling oil fields in the Timor Sea directly.
Don't you think it's deeper than that, though, too, Stephen? I mean, I saw a documentary the other night on the property investment going on in the Northern Territory and in Perth and places like that, where they're not deals that come across the Treasurer's desk. There's just vast tracts of our land being bought up.
Well, I think certainly in case of the big cattle stations, that's an issue. In terms of buying up property, apartments and places on the Gold Coast, I think the more the merrier in terms of foreign investment to support it. Where it gets tricky is where, like today, for instance, Chinese government company Sinosteel has got to 50% control of Midwest, which is an iron ore company in WA. So first time in the world.
50%?
Yeah, first time in the world a Chinese government company has done a hostile takeover and got to 50%. And they want, and Midwest also wants to sort of take over the accompanying company called Murchison Metals and basically be the dominant player in the whole Midwest region for iron ore in WA. And they're going to have to spend billions of dollars building ports at Geraldton and big rail projects. And does Australia, does the WA government really want the customer, i.e. China, which ultimately will buy the iron ore, controlling the companies that will actually do the investment and employ the workers and all those sorts of things? So Wayne Swan's sort of saying we'll have a separate special look when Chinese companies want to come in and actually be the customer and the owner of the asset, where it might distort the market. And I just think that the sheer scale of it, he's in a very difficult situation because he's yet to really block anything. And the whole Foreign Investment Review Board process happens behind closed doors. It really is smoke-filled rooms and lobbyists and nods and winks. And it's just totally confused as to, is there really a problem given what China is as a, government companies? Would you really say no to anything? Because so far he hasn't actually said no to anything, but he keeps on issuing guidelines. And
so with that Sinosteel, they've got to 50%. Does that have to go to the Foreign Investment Review Board?
Well, that's the thing. They've already got approval to take over Midwest, and they've also asked for approval to take over Murchison, which is the accompanying company, and they've yet to receive approval to that. So far it's a halfway house. They've got one of the companies in the Midwest, and everyone says these two companies should get together.
So if they don't get approval, they're not going to be very happy.
And it's really tricky because Murchison is backed by Japanese money. So Murchison wants to develop these mines in the Midwest as well, with all these deals with these big Japanese trading houses. And the Chinese government's in there with Sinosteel. They should put the two companies together. And the Foreign Investment Review Board is sitting there going, Well, Japan wants this and China wants that, and what about the Australian interest? And it's the real
mess when we don't have real guidelines. Because at the moment, it just seems to me that the dollar is king, and we're not really thinking further down the track.
Yeah, well, at the moment, if you make a big takeover bid, which the Chinese did for Sinosteel, cash is king, and they've offered $1.4 billion of Chinese cash, and a lot of the shareholders, 50%, have said, thanks very much.
We'll
in this market,
it.
We'll take it from anyone. So, really tricky situation for Wayne Swan to manage. I don't envy it, because what would you do in that situation? You obviously don't want to be discriminatory, but the idea of an undemocratic country owning more assets in Australia than our own government does, which is what's happened, is a pretty unique situation.
Derek Gill, you don't look like you have the answer.
No, I'm happy with $21 a week. Thanks very much. No, it's interesting too, because we know how much the Singaporean government has in terms of assets inside Australia, and there's suggestion that it might be a form of one party democracy in Singapore. The level of the democratic process still has a distance to travel, I would suggest, in Singapore, as it does in many other democracies. I mean, we could do better here too. But that whole business of how you balance the needs of my grandchildren's grandchildren in our country with the needs of those of us at the moment who are investing through our superannuation schemes in businesses and want the cash because I want to retire and have a really nice life, it's a tough call. But it's the same as the call we're making about the environment, isn't it? About carbon trading.
But that will all come into play, because then you'll have independent companies. We can see what China thinks about pollution in their own country, they'll be making decisions.
Well, our biggest lever with China in terms of the future of the Barrier Reef and their emissions is actually our role as a massive supplier for their huge industrialisation slash pollution program, which is what they're doing.
But we're not anywhere near making those.
Well, we haven't put that card on the table.
That game of poker hasn't started.
Well, it won't start for a while yet, I would have suggested, because on the one hand, they're continuing to be massive polluters, but on the other hand, they are actually spending a lot more money by percentage of population even on investigations into clean green living. They're building a city of a million people that's carbon neutral.
All right, what's on your show, Dad?
Snow. I can't stand the stuff. I just dislike snow intensely, and I didn't want to raise the whole issue of snow with someone who's so close to line with the Melbourne Football Club.
I'm cross. We won 10 days ago. No one's going to the snow.
That was because we sang the theme song for you on the program the other night. But no, it's your snow stories, good, bad, and otherwise.
Yep, and make sure you're talking about snow, make sure you're carrying chains. If you are heading up that way, it is a requirement by law. Freeways are all travelling well, no real hold-up except for the Westgate outbound around Montague Street, Monash at the merge with Eastlink, and toward the end of the Frankston freeways, it struggles a little with Eastlink traffic. Dandenong Road from Blackburn Road outbound is very, very heavy. You might be better to go down Westall Road or Clayton Road onto Heatherton and then back onto Dandenong Road. And somebody asked it, I've forgotten to take my medication. No, I haven't. I'm not an aggressive player. In fact, I'm very passive. I just hate it when people push in when they shouldn't, and don't get me started on those idiots that go through the damn service station to try and cut the traffic lights.
Okay. Medication should
rest. Stephen Manley, this rabble, this complete rabble sorted out.
Keep away from him on the road.
Lovely to see you. Now tomorrow, a special guest, I'm going to have, instead of you three, a different sort of man with me in the studio for an hour, uncensored, live, Sam Newman. He's going to be here for a chat.
You are brave.